The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear, we're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long.
Hey, welcome back to the National Retail Report. Top of the second hour of the show, being rebroadcast as Liberty Lighthouse on Mojo 50 Radio, Patriot Nation Radio Network, World Broadcasting Network. And by the way, this is the first 2 hour long Liberty Lighthouse. So, hey, welcome. And anybody who was trying to watch the live stream tonight, I'm sorry. I'm not a technical genius, and I can't get my two computers to do RBN and live stream at the same time, no matter what I do. I tried. I couldn't. We've got Richard Raines, as promised, the author of Finding Washington, should be on the line, ready to go, and tell us all about himself and his book. Are you there, Richard?
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on. And thanks for dealing with all the last-minute changes of how we're going to do this.
It's okay. It was easy on my end.
So let's start out with, who are you and what makes you qualified to write a book about Washington?
Great question. So I live in Northeast Florida, one of the free states in the United States. And I joke with people all the time that are my coworkers across the country that are still in various phases of COVID or the last vestiges of COVID. And I tell people all the time that COVID essentially ended in November of 2020 where I live. And so I kind of look on, like, you know, you can't help but watch a car accident. You just have to look. And that's kind of how I view the rest of the country sometimes. But I live in Northeast Florida with my wife. We have five children. I have an 18-year-old son that is in Navy boot camp getting yelled at as we speak.
So go Navy.
The Navy for about 2 weeks. So I expect to either meet a different kid in a couple of weeks, or they're going to knock on the door and say, here he is back, and then I've got to figure out what to do. But and then I've got a 16-year-old, but my wife and I live here, and I work for a very large healthcare company, but I also teach theology and history of Christianity and world religion to college students. And so what makes me qualified is that although I am a church historian, as you probably know, the history of Christianity intersects with world history and certainly American history pretty significantly. And so I have had quite an interest in American revolutionary history and really 20th century American history for a really long time. And so having to do research in the history of Christianity taught me how to do historical research. And so I started researching George Washington and discovered enough that made me decide to write this book.
Now, George Washington is the president, the second president, as far as a number of books. There's Abraham Lincoln and then George Washington. I believe somewhere around 900 books have been written about George Washington. Why would you even try when there's already so many books out there?
That's a really good question, and I asked myself the same question. In fact, I use that statistic in my book, that there are roughly 900 books that have been written about George Washington. But what I discovered is that I could not find a book written to tackle quite the subject that I wanted to tackle. And maybe I should back up just a bit to give you some perspective. So the book is about George Washington. The title of the book is Finding Washington, and a rather long subtitle, but it's Finding Washington, Why America Needs to Rediscover the Virtue of Her Most Essential Founding Father. And as far as I am concerned, as an evangelical Christian, I look around and I see that our culture is in a steep state of degradation. We are a very violent culture, a very narcissistic culture, over-sexualized culture, and I'm very concerned with what I see at all levels of leadership. And so I decided to write a book about George Washington and cover some of the lesser-known stories about the man and identify virtues that Washington displayed in these historic moments, and then I make an argument for why we need a revival of those virtues in our culture. And really, from an American historical perspective, George Washington really stands at the forefront of American historical figures that Americans have looked up to, you know, at least up until the last 7 or 8 years when it became really popular to tear statues down. But
right.
That's really the book.
I mean, if you even go back to the 18th century, the King of France at the time, when Washington's second term as president was coming to an end, and he said he wasn't going to do it again. The King of France had said something to the effect of, if he gives up that power and goes back to Virginia, he's the greatest man ever, or something to that effect. I don't remember the exact quote. So Washington was he was acknowledged worldwide for his virtue. So, yeah, I think it's great that somebody is trying to bring that back up into the conversation today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think people overlook that a bit. But the United States of America was the first country since Rome tried to be a republic. It was the first country in the world to successfully do it. So when all the European nations looked west to see what was going on in the United States, the entire continent, really, of Europe and much of the world was under the rule of a monarch. And so to see a leader, first of all, elected by popular vote, and then willingly step down was they marveled at it. And I tell people all the time now, you know, the United States was the only republic at that time. Now count on your hands the number of monarchs, true monarchs, not monarchs for the parliament, but monarchs that exist today, and you come up with just a handful, really. So this experiment, this Republican experiment, really, and Washington had a lot to do with it, changed the shape of how the world governs itself.
Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of George Washington. There are those out there that think he was a prissy character because he liked to dress nice and spend a lot of money on clothes. And there's people that nitpick him. But, you know, we're human. We're all human, including George Washington. We had our goods and our bads. You know, yeah, he owned slaves and he liked to spend too much money on clothes. But he walked away from controlling a country voluntarily. He served to create that country without pay, and then wanted to serve as president of the country without pay, but Congress wouldn't let him.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, and I talk about that. So some of the virtues that I identify through the book, one of the most prominent virtues that Washington displayed was servant leadership. And there's a really long historical story that I used to highlight that for sake of time here tonight I won't dive into, but it was his first major battle. It was really his second major battle where he was, for all intents and purposes, he was demoted by the British aristocracy because they were so angry at him for starting the French and Indian War. And in the Battle of Monongahela, George Washington exhibited a level of servant leadership that I long to see in our leaders. And I try to make the case in the book that that at every level of leadership, we need to start identifying various virtues like integrity and servant leadership. And one of the cases that I try to make through this book by looking at George Washington is if we begin to make servant leadership important for leaders, then leaders will begin to think that servant leadership is important. And I don't think it's too much to ask, particularly among elected leaders, I don't think it's too much to ask that the people that call themselves public servants actually be servants, right? And George Washington modeled that just throughout his career, both as a military leader and as the president of the United States. And so I really think another problem that we have is an integrity problem. I go into some detail, but we get the word integrity from a math term, integer, which is a whole number. It means the number's not divided, it's not a fraction. And a person of integrity is whole and not divided morally. And I think that just like servant leadership, if we could look to leaders like Washington and identify what it means to be a person of integrity, and then we start holding our leaders accountable for integrity in a real, definitive way, then integrity will become important to these folks who are wanting to lead it. And so really what I'm looking for in this book is a grassroots movement where people will, it's a short book, I made it short on purpose so that someone can sit down in a couple of days and read it and say, okay, what can I do in my community, or if I own a business, what can I do in my business, or if I'm an administrator in a school, what can I do with my teachers, or if I'm a leader in my church, what can I do with my deacons and my elders, or if I'm an elected official, what can I do as a leader in a county commission or a city council or a state government or a federal government, what can I do to turn this ship around, see a cultural shift away from some of the things that we see now, because we are as divided, in my opinion, and I hope I'm wrong, and listen, I would love it if you would tell me after I say this that I'm wrong, because I want to be wrong about this, but I don't think I am. I think we are more divided right now in the United States than we were at the beginning of the Civil War. The difference is we're not divided along state lines, and we're not divided by one singular issue, which was slavery.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I probably would have argued that point with you, but I don't know anymore. You might be right. I hope you're wrong, as you hope as well. You talked about integrity and some of the things, some of the stories of George Washington that are out there. Like one of them that I'm sure everybody knows was when at the Valley Forge, when they were wintering in, and he's got this big, beautiful farmhouse that he's going to take as his command headquarters, but he refused to sleep in that until every one of his men had finished building their little cabins and had a roof over their heads. Who does that anymore?
As far as I can tell, that's a true story. That he actually did that. And he did other things at Valley Forge, too, that sound like myths, but it turns out they were true.
Now, you mentioned the Battle of Monongahela. If I remember right, that's the battle where he got the reputation of being nearly indestructible.
That is exactly right. If you like military history, you have to read. I'm telling your listeners, you're listening to the sound of my voice, and you even have a passing interest in military history, you have to read about the Battle of Monongahela, where Washington was essentially demoted to an aide-de-camp, meaning that his role was to just to take care of General Braddock. He begged Braddock not to march these redcoats through the woods because he had already encountered the French and the Indians. He knew they didn't fight fair. They fought behind trees and other obstacles. They didn't meet you out in a field like good civilized Europeans. And so, sure enough, at Monongahela, the Native Americans and the French attacked. General Braddock was shot almost immediately. And instead of grabbing a rifle and fighting back, Washington jumps off his horse and starts tending to General Braddock. The redcoats are running for their lives. Braddock looks around. He doesn't see any leader but Washington. He says, mount the counterattack. And George Washington, who was 6'2" tall, against the average height of a European, 5'8" tall, George Washington gets up on a horse and for 12 hours fights back the Native Americans and the Indians. And in the course of that 12 hours, he has three horses shot out from under him. And when he takes his coat off that evening, he has four bullet holes in his coat, not a scratch on him. And so years later, he is in that area again after the French and Indian War, and he meets with a group of Native American leaders, and they tell him, they remember him from that battle because they all pointed their rifles at him and fired, and no one could hit him. And here's the most interesting part of that story. As a result of what they saw at Monongahela, they told their people about this white man who fought so valiantly, and the religious leaders in the Native American tribes issued a prophecy about George Washington, saying that he would one day be the father of a yet-to-be-formed nation. And I think Washington kind of carried that with him. He never talked about it, but the person who accompanied him on that trip, Dr. James Craik, he wrote about it, and there was actually a play based on all of that after Washington died. But he developed, I think, two things as a result of Monongahela. He developed a reputation as a fierce leader, fearless, really. And he developed what I believe was a sense of destiny. And I think that fierceness and that sense of destiny really caused Washington to double down on virtue and integrity. Because when he was a kid, he actually wrote a book, Washington's Rules for I believe it was Rules for Virtue or something like that. It was 110 rules that he wrote and memorized as a young man. And I think that all of that training, all of that virtuous activity as a kid, it just came to a head at Monongahela. And the Washington that we look back on in history and love so much was born in that moment.
Yeah, it really is a great point, a great historical event, a great story. You're absolutely right. Anybody who's even remotely interested in history or battle history in particular really needs to look into that one, because it's a great story. Would you be interested in answering questions from callers this evening?
Absolutely. And listen, I've heard your show, and I've heard shows like this. I'm sure a lot of your callers are going to call in and know more about George Washington than me. That's how patriots do things. But I would love to talk to the listeners.
All right. So the phone line is open, everybody. 800-313-9443 or 512-248-8252. Before we get to the phones, I want to remind everybody of my latest quest to support H.R. 46, the One Bill, One Subject Transparency Act. It's a bill sitting in Congress right now that would do more to fix the problems of our federal government than any other piece of legislation I've seen in my lifetime. It's a bill that says that every law considered by Congress can only deal with one subject at a time, that the title of the bill has to accurately describe the intent of the bill, that any amendment added to a bill must directly relate to the subject of the bill, and that no appropriations bills can change unrelated laws. My big support, or my push to try to support H.R. 46, you can find out more about the bill. You can read the entire length of the one-page bill at liberty-lighthouse.com/H.R. 46. And I also have a change.org petition set up. It's change.org/support H.R. 46, where you can sign it. Love to get everybody within the sound of my voice to go to change.org/support H.R. 46 and sign that petition. Thank you very much. Okay, so Richard, it sounds to me like your book is more about the virtue, and Washington was just the example. So it's not really a book about Washington. It's more a book about virtue with Washington as an example.
I think that's fair, although there is the the foundation of the book is are the historical stories about Washington. So I'm not sure this book would work with other folks, but you're absolutely right. I am trying really hard to make a case that we have to have a revival of virtue, and I try to do it with humor, right? A lot of self-deprecating humor. I laugh at myself quite a bit. I make fun of quite a few things in the book. Some of my kids make fun of me about stuff, and I write about it in the book. And try to keep it light when I can. But the bottom line is, we are not in a great place in our culture, and I'm really worried that I'm not going to leave my kids a better world than my dad left me. And so we have to change some things. I think we have to take the microphone away from the idiots who are small in number but extremely loud. We need a complete remaking, in my opinion, of how the executive branch interacts with the press. I've often thought many times if I were the president, some things I would do, and I'm a big supporter of H.R. 56. This thing's been swirling in committee for, 2 years now, 3 years now, because it's not popular, because these guys hide pork in these bills, and they're just pulling the wool over Americans' eyes. They'll call it something that sounds great that has nothing to do with what the bill is, and I've often thought many times that I think that if I were the president, I would hold a lottery and allow any news outlet in the United States to participate in the lottery, and whoever wins the lottery gets to cover the White House. Everyone else can just, hear about it from the rest of us. But I think if the Chattanooga Free Press or the local paper in Lubbock, Texas were covering the White House, you'd probably get a lot better journalism to start with. And I think you'd get a lot more honest journalism, and I think you would actually do a better job of actually interacting with the press rather than constantly being on the defense or trying to spin a message. I think that has to be revised in this country. None of this is going to happen by trying to just revise the press or just do that. I think where it starts is you and I deciding that we are going to become virtuous people. And some of the virtues I highlight, integrity, servant leadership, conviction, inspiration, character, empathy. Let me just give you, for instance, now this is going to be tough for us because, I was in politics. I served in public office, loved it, had a great time in public office, did a lot of good, met a lot of great people, did some dumb stuff, but did some good stuff, and really enjoyed that. So I understand politics, but I think the only way we change this thing at a political level is when we go into the voting booth in November, that before we consider party affiliation, that we consider integrity. Which candidate has the most integrity? And then we vote based on who has the most integrity. Now, that's tough for somebody like me that's a partisan, because I think about all the intricate details, right? I think about all the ancillary issues. But I think the only way we get this done is we start choosing county commissioners based on integrity and mayors based on integrity and school superintendents based on integrity and all the way up the chain. And if we, as a grassroots, if we begin to highlight integrity as the chief virtue that someone needs to lead us, then the people who want to lead will begin to become people of integrity, if that makes sense.
I think so. The problem that we have now is the people that want to run for public office are not the people that should be running for public office. It's people that don't want the jobs that would do them best. Again, George Washington is a good example. He didn't want the presidency. He didn't want many of the things that he was given, but he did them out of noblesse oblige, the sense of duty to country. Hey, it's break time. Be back in just a couple of minutes with Richard Raines, author of Finding Washington, and more of your phone calls.
Oh. Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Sure. Welcome back to the final segment of National Intel Report on Republic Broadcasting Network and Liberty Lighthouse on Mojo 50 Radio, WBN 324, and Patriot Nation Radio. We've got Richard Raines with us tonight, author of Finding Washington, and hope to hear some of your calls and questions for Richard about his book. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. 512-248-8252. And hey, look, we got a call. Gregory from California on line one, welcome to National Intel Report. And before you get to your question, how do you listen to RBN?
Well, right now I'm listening via phone. Normally I try to listen through the internet, but it keeps on crapping out on me. So, yeah, I'm just... anyway, I can get a hold of you guys, right? And sometimes Mike lets me talk here because my phone company, which said to be giving me unlimited service, denies me listening to you guys over the phone. It's the queerest darn thing you ever did see, but, well, actually not. But the question, how much research, Richard, have you done on... his mother, Martha.
You mean his wife, Martha?
No, oh, Mary was his mother. Yeah, Martha was his wife, that's right. Was it Mary?
I believe his mother's name was Mary, I think. The only research, good question, by the way, the only real place that she had in my research was when I was reading about his life as a youngster, sort of anecdotally, she would show up in some of the stories. But the real meat of my research was on Washington as an adult. And I don't know at what age his mother passed away, but she sort of exited the historical picture pretty early. But that's a good question.
Yeah, she was very instrumental in his upbringing, and... yeah, I read a book about her once and about him when I was doing that, and this must have been 20 years ago. So I don't have the names of the books on hand or anything like that right now. I'm in the process of moving. But irrespective of that, all the research you can on all those people you can back there, you know, who they were related to, what, you know, inner workings and intertwindings. I find it extremely fascinating, but there's so many fascinating things on this planet. Anyways, thank you so much for your time and your effort, and everybody out there in RBN as well.
Hey, thanks for your call, Gregory.
Thank you so much. Can I stay on the line, Mike?
So, Richard, your book, I pulled it up on Amazon. Is that the best place to find it?
Anywhere online books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. What I would recommend that you do is you contact your local bookstore, because your local bookstore has access to the wholesaler and they can get the book. So if you like books and you like your local bookstore, give them a call, let them order it for you. But it's discounted on Amazon right now. I'd recommend purchasing the Kindle version or the paperback, because both of those are priced right now pretty close to $10. I think the paperback is around $12. But, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of those.
Yeah, right now on Amazon, the Kindle is $8.49 and the paperback is $12.45. I know you can't control that. They change it whenever they want, and they do that kind of stuff. Hey, everybody, it's real easy to find. Just type Finding Washington. It came right up. You don't even have to remember Richard's name. But if you do Richard Raines, Finding Washington, it still comes up as well. Buy the book and give them one of the things for small independent authors. Those reviews, like review the book, read the book and then do a review. That is probably the biggest help you can give to an independent author. And you are an independent. I didn't ask. You're self-published, right, sir?
I am. I've learned quite a bit about writing a book. I wrote this during COVID, during 2020, and didn't publish it until this year. But first of all, it is an industry that is pretty opposed to my worldview for the most part, and so not a lot of people lining up to publish books by unknown authors. But there's certainly not a lot of people lined up to publish books about George Washington, because you know we need to tear all those statues down. And so I did self-publish, but I've had a great experience self-publishing. And listen, I know how your audience thinks. There's a lot of people listening to us that have thought, I should write a book. You know what? You should. And self-publish it. And then we need to flood the bookstores and the space with books written by people that love this country and not by people who are just trying to find ways to tear this country down.
Right. Well, I've written two. Mine are even shorter than yours, and I self-published as well. Couldn't find a publisher. Nobody was interested. But one of them was popular enough that several listeners of my show bought multiple copies and mailed them to Washington, D.C. to their elected representatives. The title of that one is So Simple Even a Politician Can Understand, Simple Ideas for Seemingly Complex Issues. And in that book is when I first learned about H.R. 46. So let's see here. We got, is that Quincy in Florida on line 3?
How are you guys doing?
I'm good. How are you, Quincy?
Excellent. It's Quince.
Quince, I'm
sorry.
This is
a very interesting show. I'm very fascinated, and I'm calling in to get some recommendations, because finding books that are true, authentic, and have real information that's not tainted or in error, that's quite a challenge. You know, so I'm looking for the names of some authors that you could recommend for doing more research on George Washington.
Absolutely. That's a great question. And Quint, that is the first I've done. This may be number 20 for me, radio interview or podcast. And that is the first time someone's asked me that question. So good job. If we were giving out stickers, I'd give you a sticker for that one.
So, Yahoo! Yeah, send it to me.
So there's a lot of really good sources. National Archives and the Smithsonian, you'll find a lot of original material there. A lot of the letters that were written, they have to be, you have to have someone interpret it because, you know, it's over 200 years old and it's hard to read some of the handwriting. But there's one book that really helped me, and I read it before I did anything else. It's called The Real George Washington. And the subtitle is The True Story of America's Most Indispensable Man. And so it has a couple of authors. It's the first book on my bookshelf. There's a part one and a part two. This is volume three of what it says, the American Classic Series. Part one is by Jay Perry and Andrew Allison. But The Real George Washington, The True Story of America's Most Indispensable Man. This was a really good book to help me understand George Washington in terms of his entire life. There's a couple of really good podcasts that you might want to listen to.
All right.
There was a reporter for, I believe, I'm sorry, you there?
Yes, I'm writing it down.
Okay, so there's two podcasts you need to listen to. One is by a Washington Post reporter, and I don't remember her name, but it's called The Presidential Podcast. It's one episode for each president, and obviously the first episode is George Washington, and it is very accurate historically. It's a really good podcast. And then Newt Gingrich has a podcast, and one of his first episodes is on George Washington, and I think he mentions some books in there, and he talks about the Battle of Monongahela as well. But if you're looking for a really good book, The Real George Washington was good for me. But there's also a book that we've been mentioning all night that's a really good resource for George Washington, and that is by Richard Raines, Finding Washington. You could also pick that up at Amazon if I didn't mention that.
That wasn't subtle at all.
Not at all.
Hey, Quince, how do you listen to RBN?
I listen to it on the internet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great show.
Thanks, Quince.
Bye-bye.
All right. Now we got Chance in West Virginia.
Yes. Hello. Can I speak to your guest? Richard Raines is your name, I believe you said, sir?
It is.
Okay. Mr. Raines, are you aware? I've read, looking back on George Washington's bloodline, going back, you realize he comes from the Plantagenet bloodline. Him, along with Jefferson, Zachary Taylor, FDR, and Herbert Hoover, from the Plantagenet. Do you know who I'm talking about now?
I do. The Plantagenet is
the royal bloodline in England.
I believe, right.
Yes, I believe they're of the Merovingian dynasty, correct? Going way back.
Now, that's a little further back than I'm familiar with, but that's really not that uncommon because what you would find in, you know, these feudal societies is you would see one family that would be the aristocracy, and a lot of these founding fathers were really American aristocracy, so it doesn't surprise me that you would find some of that aristocratic bloodline among some of these founding fathers.
Well, that's a good catch, Chance. Yeah, I figured I'd run that by you because it was a pretty interesting bit of information I read a while back. I believe it was in Fritz Springmeier's book. Bloodline,
okay.
I believe, and I seem to recall that, and I just wanted to, you know, confirm it with you, that's all. Well, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks for calling. Well, since you're doing shameless plugs, I'm going to do another one for myself, too. Help me out by going to liberty-lighthouse.com. I'm helping to fight inflation by lowering prices in the store at liberty-lighthouse.com, liberty-lighthouse.com. So you go to the store. I got all T-shirts all marked down. And, you know, buy some merch and help a brother out. I got funny T-shirts, too. I got one that's got a big eye on it, and it says, Make Orwell Fiction Again. I got another one that says, Men are from Mars, women are from Venus, all the others are from Uranus.
That's right. Yeah, you know, on a really clear night, you can look up and you can see your anus. It's just, there it is.
It's getting a lot easier.
I wonder if the telescope gives us a really better view of Uranus or not, or if it's still just a dark place.
I'm starting to figure out that it's a lot easier to see a lot of people's anuses in this woke-utopia that we're living in right now.
They seem to lead with it, don't they? That's their highlight. So
that's where I was trying to go with that.
Is interesting is a lot of people are asking about George Washington, the slave owner. I get that question quite a bit because he obviously did own slaves. And I do cover it in the book. I thought that as a historian that it would be disingenuous for me not to cover slavery. And I do talk about him as a slave owner. And, you know, I don't really give him any grace for that, because as many great things as he did, he was a slave owner, and he came to believe that slavery was immoral, but he didn't do anything about it. He tried, but he didn't complete a plan to get rid of it. But I guess the problem that I have with the way that we are viewing history now is we are saying that if someone owns slaves, then we have to discount everything they've ever done in the history of ever, right? We have to completely wipe them out. And to
right,
that,
which wipes out basically all history before the 19th century.
Well, not only that, but if we're going to do that, then let's do it. Let's just do it. So if we're going to say if slavery's wrong, then we're going to eliminate any person that's ever owned slaves, then here's what we're going to do. We are going to grab everything in our home that has any connection to China. And we're going to drag it out the front yard, and we're going to set fire to it, because there's currently 3.8 million slaves in China. If you or someone you know views internet pornography, there are currently 24 million people, which dwarfs, by the way, the number of slaves, the 388,000 slaves that came to the U.S. through the transatlantic slave trade. There are 24 million people currently in human sex trafficking. And if you view internet pornography, you've done more to put money in the pocket of a slave owner than anybody that bought goods and services from George Washington. And so we have to stop trading with China. We have to shut down the internet. We have to stop trading with Angola and Congo and all the other West African countries that rounded up these black Africans and sold them to Europeans. So let's just do it. Let's don't buy diamonds anymore, because a lot of the diamonds that come from Angola are mined with slave trade. So if we're going to do that, let's do it. Well, now, of course, that's not what we mean.
No,
right?
No, it's only American slavery that's a problem.
Only American slavery. And it's even less genuine than that. It's the woke doing whatever the woke masters say we have to do today. Whatever they tell us to be angry about, we're angry until there's something else to be angry about. They don't even care what it is. It's just an opportunity to tear down our society. But anyway, Washington owned slaves. It's horrible. It's something that I don't give him any credit for. I think he failed himself. He failed his slaves. He failed his country, even though he tried to enact a plan to free slaves. It didn't work. But I just don't think that you throw the baby out with the bathwater, which I think is what the woke mob would like for us to do. But even in that, I think what we learn is that Washington was imperfect. But there are other things we can learn from him. And I think that in my book, I at least try to make an argument for real ways that we can do that. Now, one of the things I do in the book is I give my email all throughout the book. It's Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, Richard at findingwashington.com. And if you buy this book and you read it, I want you to send me an email and tell me maybe I didn't think of a great idea, or maybe some of my ideas lack substance and you have a better idea. Tell your ideas to me on how we can turn this thing around and how we can take control of our nation again, because I want to be a part of that solution and not just write books and forget about it. I want to be a part of the solution.
Well, I have to say, I try to put forth solutions in my show. I've gotten to the point where I try to give ideas of what we can actually do rather than sit here. I don't want to be a talking head sitting behind a microphone and that's it. I generally host a political talk show. I try to avoid the topic of religion because, for one, I'm not a very religious person, and I just don't like the discussion, how it usually goes. But the one thing I will say is our country was founded on Christian moral values with a Christian mindset. And George Washington was one of the people that embodied that, though. Yeah, he went to churches everywhere he went. Anytime he traveled, he went to the local church. Yet, but he didn't, in his speech, in his mannerism, he didn't beat people over the head with Christianity. He did it in the, this is the person that I am sort of way. I think a lot of us need to take that piece of the virtue. We need to live the life rather than trying to shove it down everybody else's throats. Be the example that people can see.
I think you bring up a good point, and I try to make the point in the book. But Washington's virtue, and so I define virtue as an expression of morality. So virtue isn't just something you believe, virtue is something you do, right? So you don't just believe virtue, you are virtuous. Does that make sense? Like, it's who you are. And so for Washington, being a person of integrity and servant leadership and being a person of conviction and character and empathy and all of these things I'll talk about was the primary expression of his faith. Now, this was, you know, during the Enlightenment. This is before evangelicalism, so Christianity was, it's hard for us to really wrap our minds around Christianity in the colonies versus Christianity today because they just spoke differently and used different language. But Washington was definitely a Christian, as were most of the founding fathers. Some were deists, like Thomas Jefferson, but certainly not all, not even most. But you are exactly right. For Washington, it was about what he did and what he, so not just believing, but doing. I make a thing in the book. I talk about knowing, being, and doing. And Washington seemed to really balance those three. He had knowledge, which is knowing. He did the right things, which is doing. But this being part, this ontological part of us, to use a $40 word, this aspect of his nature that flowed from his faith. And you don't have to be a Christian to be an American. But I don't think there's any doubt that the American system was founded by people who had embraced Christianity as the chief ideology for morality, if that makes sense.
Well, that makes perfect really sense, separate. And I don't think anybody could argue ahead, that sorry. Point.
Well, I don't either. People do. It's just not a good argument, but people do.
All right, we got Chris in Virginia on line one. Chris, welcome to National Intel Report, and how do you listen to RBN?
Hey, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Hear you fine. How you listen?
Oh, yeah, I listen online. I mean, that's the only place you can listen to RBN. I don't think you guys have affiliates.
Well, there's a couple of little ones out there. That's why I'm asking.
Right, I got you, yeah. Yeah, online exclusively, sir. But I had a question for Mr. Range. Being that you've delved in, thanks for writing the book, being that you delved into all this, can you, a couple things. You guys are talking about saving the country, and that's something that I pretty much agonize over every day. And my personal opinion on it is, I don't think things are bad enough in this country yet, if you can believe that, to wake every person that needs to be woken up to actually do something. I think that's what kind of all this sitting out here on our hands, waiting for a shoe to drop. But I just think things have to get a lot worse, unfortunately, because of all the people that I know who still don't think anything's going on. Everything's just perfectly normal. So, but the question, that's my opinion about it. But my question to you, Mr. Reed, is since with your knowledge of history, can you provide a snapshot, a slice, a cross-section of the population at the time of George Washington as in percentages as to the morality of the people then, generally?
I don't think I understand.
Just a little bit, Chris, are you asking about the overall moral condition of the people during the Revolutionary War? Is that what your question is, Chris?
Yes, sir. I guess in comparison to today, I'm trying to ask the question, well, what were the people like then? And do we have a chance with the people that we have left here? Because we know that the nation was created for a moral people.
That is a really good question, Chris, and I'll answer it to the best of my knowledge. So, generally speaking, 90-plus percent of the colonists during the Revolutionary War went to a Christian church. There were a smattering of Jews, but even some of the deists were affiliated with a local church. They just didn't go as often. But from a moral perspective, simpler moral society, meaning that they didn't have the opportunity to be as immoral as we have with technology. But comparing the two, I would say that America was a much more moral society. It was a much less sexualized. It was a much less narcissistic. It was the gentleman. I hate to borrow the term gentleman scholar from Confucianism, but it was almost a gentleman scholar where being virtuous was highlighted, was a good thing. It was now that's not to say that there wasn't violence and there wasn't anger, and particularly the political rhetoric was pretty rough. If you read some of the political cartoons from back in those days, they were really personal. But I would say generally it's more moral. So I think your question is more, if I understand it right, and I know we're getting close to that final hour, but I think your question is more along the lines of maybe how we make the change now if it seems like not as many people are engaged and if it seems like things have to get worse. I do agree with you, Chris, to some extent. I worry that things are going to have to get worse, and I even think they are going to get worse to some extent, and that comes more from my Christian faith and some things that Jesus said, but I'll save that for the next book. But what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to say that we feel powerless. The Chris's and the Richards and the Quinces and the Chances of the world feel powerless because it's just me. But what I'm trying to say in this book is it's not just you. There's more of us than there are of them. It's just the idiots have the microphone. And I really mean that. The stupid people are the ones doing all the talking, and we're just having to take it. Well, now what I've discovered is that people like us aren't willing to take it anymore. Because now what they're doing is they're saying, okay, now we're going to tell you exactly how you're going to have to talk. And good people have conceded small things for so long that they're not willing to concede them anymore. And those that hate this country are so used to our concession that now they're angry because we're not conceding anymore. And so what I'm saying is that in the Richards and Chances and Quinces and Chris's, what you can do, you can invite all your neighbors over for a barbecue. And you can say, hey, I'm concerned about our country. Can we get together and just talk about some things that unite us and not divide us before this next election? Can we just talk about some of these things? And it's about finding like-minded people. It's about getting involved in school PTAs. And it's about having books. You know what? Buy my book, or if you can't afford it, email me and I'll send it to you. Not everybody, just talking to Chris here. And start a book club. Read the books. I'd like you to read this book. I met this guy on the internet. He's kind of a redneck, but I think he makes sense. And read the book, and then let me Zoom in. Put me on a Zoom so that I can talk about some of this stuff. And let's start making some of these changes together. And I think small steps, hopefully, will get us where we need to be. I hope that answers your question, Chris.
Hey, you did a great job. Thank you, sir. Thank you for writing the book.
All right.
I'll let somebody else. Thank you.
Hey, Richard, thank you very much for joining the show. I'm going to quote the Declaration of Independence. Mankind are more disposed to suffer while the evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. The question is, are the evils still sufferable? Hey, I'm going to be here hosting this show, the National Intel Report, on Thursdays, well, for the foreseeable future. Jerry Kirk might come back, should come back. When he does, he can have his seat. But until then, you got me every Thursday here in the National Intel Report. Until next week, protect your liberties. Once they're gone, there's no getting them back. God bless America. We must take the medical bed.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.